You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com.
Attention sports fans. Are you a fan of an NFL team? Would you love to attend your favorite team's Week 1 game? Well, you're in luck. Fans First Sports Network is giving away 4 free tickets to the Week 1 NFL game of your choice up to $5,000. The rules to enter are simple. Step 1, go to contest.fansfirstsports.com. That's contest.fansfirstsports.com and fill out the appropriate information. Step 2, find us on Facebook, Fans First Sports Network, and like our page. That's it. Once you've done that, you've officially been registered to win the 4 free tickets to any Week 1 NFL game. What are you waiting for? Go enter for your shot at seeing your favorite team in action. Contest ends on September 4th.
And we are at number 2. And as you've already heard from the introduction, it is none other than Cole Caulfield. And none of us are really surprised about that, especially not our guest, Arpon Basso of the Athletic Montreal. How are you doing, Arpon?
I'm good. Glad to speak with you guys in a nice summer day.
Oh, well, it's nice on this side of the pond as well. So we're happy it travels well. We're also joined by Anton Rossegaard.
Yeah.
A strong team. Was it 2 years ago you joined us for the top 22? 25 under 25?
The years all blend together. I don't know.
You were at the Athletic at least. So
I was. So yeah. Within the last six, I think it was for Kotkaniemi. I joined you. Yeah. So now that he's gone, we have another guy to talk about. But yeah, it was a few years ago. I think it's been a while.
What stands out with Cole Caulfield this year is really the 26 goals in 46 games. If you toss in the 10 assists, that's perfectly fine. But what we're expecting from Cole Caulfield is the goals. It would put him on 46 goals in total over an 82 game season if he wasn't injured. Were you surprised about that, Arpon?
What I was surprised about was that was the context in which he was doing it. You know, I mean, it's the beginning of the season. The team was playing pretty well, was competitive. But when the injuries started to pile up sometime in early December, when they started to hit, the goal scoring didn't really change, you know. So he has shown from the first day Martin St. Louis was named as coach, he has shown a remarkable level of consistency in his ability to score. And, you know, that's valuable, and he's been rewarded for that with the contract he just signed. But you know, there's other consistency in his game that is, I think, a little bit more concerning to the Canadians and probably to Cole himself, where he just needs to round things out and become just a more well-rounded player and not be just a one-dimensional scorer. But you know, a lot of players try to add the goal scoring. They have the well-roundedness. They just don't have the goal. Like, so at least he's working. He has the hardest thing down. Now he just has to add some other elements to his game. But yeah, definitely a very encouraging season. And the variety of ways he was scoring goals too, I think it's becoming a little bit more diverse. It's not just one-timers from here and there. He's really diversifying his ways of attacking the net. And I think that's only going to improve. I mean, he's an incredibly hard worker. And so I think we're going to start seeing more and more different ways of scoring from Cole Caulfield as he goes along.
How much of an importance is it that he has Martin St. Louis, a short, fantastic player of NHL, highest NHL caliber, as a coach that could maybe help him mold into that all-roundness as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot is made of the fact that Marty was an undersized player and that's why Cole can relate to him. I think that gives Marty a lot of currency with Cole, because Cole always looked up to him as a kid and admired his ability to excel and be a Hart Trophy winner at that size. But really, when it comes down to coaching, I don't think Marty's experience as an undersized player factors too much into it. I mean, it really, they're completely different players. You know, I mean, it's not as if you could say that Cole Caulfield plays like a Marte St. Louis. And I think that's what Marte wants to kind of infuse into Cole, is just a bit more of that sort of fiery competitiveness that Marty played with, where, you know, you go into a puck battle thinking you're going to win it. And maybe that's where Marty's experience as an undersized player can play a role, because he found a way to do that as an undersized player. Like, he knew he wasn't going to physically throw people off pucks, but he came out of puck battles with the puck more often than not, but towards, you know, in the prime of his career. So I think there's some importance there, but it's really hit just Marty's ability to relate with each individual player, and knowing how to relate to that player is a real skill he has. You know, I think there's some areas where Marty can grow, but the interpersonal relationship and the one-on-one coaching is something that he does extremely well. And so, yeah, Cole is definitely a beneficiary of that. And Marty brings it up almost every time he's asked a question about Cole. He's the one who mentions there are other areas of Cole's game that need to improve. And so I think we're going to start seeing that more and more starting this season, with, assuming Marty doesn't have like a million other fires to put out with injuries and whatever, I think we'll start to see some adjustments in Cole's game, just like we've seen in Josh Anderson's game, for instance. You know, his game has changed demonstrably since Marty came on board because of the things that Marty's been talking to him about, and I think we'll see that with Cole as well.
Yeah, do you feel like, even though you say that Marty is very good in the interpersonal relationship, you know, when it comes to teaching players and, you know, just basically being that role model both on and off the ice, do you think that he feels a certain relationship with Cole Caulfield, being you know, of the fact that, you know, from the start that he came to Montreal, Martin Saint-Louis, obviously there was already doubt about Cole Caulfield after, you know, a disastrous season with Dominique Ducharme, and he took him under his wings, and all of a sudden Caulfield has not looked back after that. Do you feel like there's a special type of connection between Saint-Louis and Caulfield, or is it just, you know, in general that Saint-Louis is a good kind of teaching aspect coach?
I mean, there's definitely something special there. You can't look at the before and after and think otherwise, but I do think Marty has that kind of relationship with several players. You know, I mean, I mentioned Josh Anderson before. I talked to him for a story I did on these adjustments that Marty's making with him. So at least once a week, he would spend 10 minutes with Marty alone in the video room, looking over his clips. And I haven't asked every single player this, but like, they're not alone. Like, they're not the only ones that he does this with. Like, he really does make an effort to get some one-on-one time with every player on the team, no matter how insignificant you are. I mean, you know, Michael Pezzetta, for example, remember at the beginning of last season when the team was healthy, he couldn't get in the lineup. They didn't want to put him on waivers and risk losing him, so he couldn't go to Laval. So he was stuck in waiver prison, as I like to call it. And so he was a healthy scratch every game. Well, every game, after every healthy scratch, I mean, the guy who probably spent the most one-on-one time with Marty last year was probably Michael Pezzetta, because he was on the ice with him after every morning skate and spending like 30, 40 minutes. Trust me, as a member of the media who's waiting to speak to the coach, those sessions could feel very long. But I would always make an effort when we realized what was taking him so long. I would make an effort to go and watch what he's doing on the ice. And like, on some occasions, there'd be Pezzetta. And I remember one time in New York, in Queens, before an Islanders game, it was Mike Matheson, Mike Hoffman, and Michael Pezzetta. Three Mikes. But one of them is not like the other two. And they were all being treated, they're all being coached the same. And Marty was making an emphasis on Pezzetta, showing him what Hoffman did in a situation and said, you could do that, you know, kind of thing. And so, so he really is, you know, he has, I would call it remarkable optimism for every one of his players. He believes in the potential of every one of his players. It just needs to be brought out of them. And he really truly believes that that's his responsibility, no matter how, no matter what spectrum, where you fall on the talent spectrum. You know, Michael Pizzetti, it would be fair to assume he would fall lower on that spectrum. I don't think Marty sees it that way. You know, he really sees him as anyone who's in the NHL has a certain base level of talent that they can develop and that they can bring more out of. And he believes in that for like almost for all his players, basically, you know, and he, you know, I mean, he sees value in Mike Hoffman where I don't, you know,
it's just,
there's a lot of, it's a redeeming quality of his, and it's a luxury that he has because he coaches a team that's not expected to win. Like my biggest curiosity with Marty is how is he going to act when his team has expectations to win? That's the unknown right now.
I was just going to ask that question, Arpan. Do you think that he will change, like personally, from meeting him as much and as often as you do? Or do you think that the pressure of winning and pressure of Montreal will finally bite into him at that point?
I think the pressure of winning or the expectation of winning will take over. He's just fiercely competitive. And we saw it on a few occasions this season after a loss where he got angry at his team and he actually let it slip. And actually, I mean, speaking of Cole Caulfield, this is a perfect example. Is I forget who the game was against, but there was a goal that the Canadiens gave up where the puck was sent up to the chip guy at the red line. And so Gouley stepped up on him for a hit. The puck got past him and ultimately led to a breakaway and they scored. I don't even remember what team it was. And so Marty was asked after the game, did Gouley make a mistake there stepping up on his man? And Marty said, no, that wasn't the mistake. And then he just wanted to leave it at that. Then he was asked again, and he couldn't help himself. He said, well, when one guy's not doing his job, when one guy lets his man get behind him, the whole team suffers. And that's all he had to say. And if you go back and you look at the goal, the player who wound up with the breakaway was Cole Caulfield's man. And Cole Caulfield was 10 feet on the wrong side of him. Basically, he's on the offensive side of him. And that's what Marty saw as leading to the goal. So, you know, he rarely, the only reason I remember that is because he almost never did that. He went out of his way to make sure he never called one of his players out or at least even provide the hints for you to figure out who was at fault. But in that situation, he did it. So when they're playing meaningful games and the expectation, not only the expectation, but there's a tangible need to win a game, which, let's be honest, management never told them that they had to win any game last year. So that's going to change. So I wonder if that side of Marty's going to change too, where there will be some more public accountability. He will not defend his players at all costs. If a player had a bad game, he'll be willing to say it, because right now there's none of that. You know, I mean, he has taken the positive side of every player he has, almost exclusively. And frankly, the real exception is Cole Caulfield, because he's the one guy that Marty makes a point of mentioning how there's other aspects of his game that need to improve. That's what I said about too many other players.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's what I actually think. Like, you know, what I meant with the question as well, that maybe he feels a little bit more of a father-son kind of relationship there, that he knows that he can push the buttons a little bit more on Cole Caulfield.
I think he...
he demands a little bit more.
He demands more from him, and that's why, because he's going to be a star player on the team. You know, and Marty's been the star player on the team. And there's a certain level of accountability that you have that, not to pick on him, but Michael Pizzetta doesn't have. You know, I mean, it's or some other sort of bottom of the line. Jake Evans doesn't have that same accountability, even though he's a very responsible player. But, you know, you have to set an example. And so, you know, Marty, when he played, was a very intense, fierce guy to deal with as a reporter. Wasn't exactly the best interview in the world, I gotta admit. Like, I didn't go running to Marty St. Louis' locker after a game to hear what he had to say. Generally, he didn't really want to talk to us. Now obviously it's the complete opposite, but it's I mean, I guess it's fair. I think the reason he does it with Cole is because it's so important to the team's success that Cole develops this part of his game. You know, I think even frankly, I think Nick is kind of in the same ballpark right now. I mean, you know, the Canadians are a very analytically inclined organization now, and Cole and Nick on the ice together, their analytics are not great. You know, they spend a lot of time chasing the puck in their own end, and entire shifts are spent without them even handling the puck in the offensive zone. And so this is something I think that's of concern to the organization somewhat. The offensive gifts for both those players are quite evident. In Nick's case, he's always been a two-way player his whole career. So I don't think there's as much concern in his case that he can develop that part and round that out. But in Cole's case, you know, Cole's always kind of been this guy. He's the sniper, the designated scorer. That's what he does well, and there's always been holes in other areas of his game. And so now that he has no more levels to climb, I think it's a real point of emphasis for the coach and for the organization and for Cole himself. Cole's talked about it, and he realizes he's aware of this. So it's a priority for all three of those parties for this area of his game to improve.
Just a quick break. We need to have a word from our sponsors. Thank you guys for turning down the volume and getting back in a few seconds for the rest of the podcast.
The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki season 2 is
marvelous.
Great. And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki season 2. Now streaming only on Disney Plus.
Because we mentioned one end of that formation, Nick Suzuki. Who will be the third part, though? Would that be Dach, as we saw a little bit last year? Or do you think Newhook will be able to slot in there and do maybe a little bit more of the defensive work in order to cover for Cole?
I do believe that they acquired Newhook with the thought that his speed would help those guys out defensively. Now, he's not the biggest player. That would be a pretty small line. Newhook, Suzuki, Cole. But I do think that that's going to get a look. I think that was one of the motivating factors, is that Newhook's speed would allow him to get back on defense quicker than Nick and Cole probably. But I mean, really, Nick was because of his experience playing center, because he's able to play down low as a result and knows what he's doing down there, he could alleviate some of Nick's responsibilities defensively with his speed. I believe Doc will be at center this year. The organization looks at him. I mean, the thing about the whole Pierre-Luc Dubois situation was that the organization looks at Doc as a center. So they didn't feel the need to go all out in an attempt to acquire Pierre-Luc Dubois, because they could have put together a competitive package if they were willing to include, say, a Caden Gooley or a Doc or someone, you know, kind of a premium NHL-ready young player, which is what they got in Gabe Vilardi, plus an established NHL player like Iafallo. The Canadiens could have put a package like that together if they really wanted to. They just didn't want to. And the reason they didn't want to is because they see Doc as a really good solution at center. So the other possibility to play on that wing would be Sean Monahan, who played well with those two guys at the beginning of last season for a stretch. You know, if Doc is indeed at center, then Monahan, to me, makes sense playing with Doc so that he can take faceoffs with him. But always a possibility. And the one guy that we didn't see playing with Nick and Cole last year was Slafkovský.
And yeah, exactly.
I really think had he not gotten hurt, and had Cole not gotten hurt, and had everyone not gotten hurt, but had Slaf not gotten hurt, I think by March we would have seen something like that. I think that there was a plan with Slafkovský to give him little bits. You know, at first he wasn't on the power play, then he started getting second power play duty. He started slowly getting more and more ice time. It was a very meticulous plan they had with him that he was involved with. He had all the information. He knew what the plan was. And I remember, I think it was in St. Louis, which is when Marty, I think, put Doc on that line. I remember talking to him about putting Slaff on that line. And he was like, yeah, it's a possibility, but really his body language said that it wasn't a possibility. And the real reason for that was that the type of matchups that Nick gets, Slaff wasn't ready for. But I do think that by the end of the season, he would have been. And actually, I mean, not to make this all about Slaff, but I mean, I had a chance to talk to Marty at the draft in Nashville on him. And it was really interesting hearing him talk. He talked about how he had gone back and watched games from early in the season. And he was watching for all sorts of, he wasn't just watching to watch Slaff, but he said it was interesting when you go back and you're removed from the heat of the situation and the day to day of the season, and you're just watching a game months later, how much Slaff stood out. And he even admitted, he's like, I think maybe in the heat of it, I didn't see the extent to which he stood out. I didn't see how effective he was being in those other areas of the game that Cole needs to work on. But like his defensive positioning, his engagement in board battles, even if he didn't win the battle, the way he was going about it, there were a lot of aspects of his game that stood out. And so I think, you know, I do think Newhook will get a look with Nick and Cole, but I think Slaff is if I had anything to do with the decision, I would try that because I think he'd be a perfect fit.
Well, he said that himself before the draft, right?
Yeah, exactly. And not only that, but when they drafted him, they put his jersey in the dressing room, and they had Cole's jersey and Nick's jersey right next to it, and they put it right there. So it's not as if that didn't come out of nowhere. You know, I mean, it's the Canadians themselves made a pretty cool setup, and he said it right after. He's like, man, Cole was on Cole's jersey and Nick's jersey, they were right next to mine. It was so cool. And he never got to play with them.
There will be plenty of time for that.
Yes, there will be plenty of time for that. Yes. Yeah.
Going back to the man who shall not be mentioned, Pierre-Luc Dubois, one thing that also might have hindered that acquirement was probably Cole's and Suzuki's contracts. Because he asked for a fair bit more.
No, I don't think so. I think the Canadians were willing to pay him more than Nick Suzuki. It's you know, a lot of people made too much, I think, of the whole like Suzuki cap that Caulfield had to fall under. And Kent explained it. This is not me talking. This is Kent Hughes, and he explained it quite well. He's like, listen, these are both players coming out of entry level. They're in the same situation, so that's why we felt that way. Pierre-Luc Dubois is not in that situation. He just signed, I believe, his fourth professional contract already. He's only 25, so or maybe third. Anyhow, it's not. He's not coming out of entry level, is my point. He's actually, you know, a year away from unrestricted free agency. The circumstances are completely different. I think the Canadians would have been more than happy. Honestly, I don't think the Canadians would have had a huge problem paying him the contract that he ultimately got, 8 times 8.5, which is, you know, a reasonable amount for a player in his situation. I don't think the money was the issue. I think it was really the trade was really the bigger issue. And there's no guarantee that Dubois would sign that contract with Montreal. It's you know, we sort of kind of heard rumblings that an opportunity to win, they'd be willing to make somewhat of a trade-off money-wise if there was a clear path to short-term winning, which Montreal obviously could not offer. So I don't know if that 8.5 figure would have been acceptable in a Montreal context, but it never really got to that because the Canadiens weren't willing to give the Jets what they needed in a trade like this.
Cole Caulfield, obviously a small player. Montreal has a history of small players. We love them.
Mats Naslund, my favorite player as a kid. Absolutely.
Yeah. Great player. Maybe more of a playmaker, though, than Cole, even if he was
yes.
I think he told me that in the World Junior Championships, his first goal for Sweden was against Tretiak.
Wow. That's wild.
That's pretty wild. Yeah. And he was on this on the all-star team together with Gretzky as well. So it was quite a bit of a good tournament.
And Lemieux, he set the all-star game record for assists by a left winger. I remember this clearly. This is how big of a dork I am. But all-star game record for assists by a left winger because he was riding shotgun with Mario, and Mario went wild. Bonkers. And
yeah,
I remember as a kid, it was like the greatest. I couldn't believe my favorite player was playing with Mario Lemieux. He was lighting. He was getting points left, right, center. It was amazing. Mm-hmm.
We have Mike Camilleri from you know the run in 2010.
Yeah.
Which kind of player do you think Cole Caulfield will be more like? Because there's always this comparison that we ask and get asked, especially in media.
Henri Richard, obviously.
I didn't want to mention that name.
I think Camilleri is a closer, probably a more closely resembles the type of player Cole is. I think the Canadians would like the Cole to turn into someone like Brian Gionta. I mean, if we're dealing with smaller players, that goes back to the well-roundedness. Listen, Gionta was an incredible scorer. Primarily, I mean, he was a great scorer for the Canadians, but he was really a prolific. He was a 40-goal scorer for the Devils before. So it's not as if he didn't score goals, but he was a full 200-foot player. Went to the hard areas, did everything you could possibly want a hockey player to do, and still had that scoring element. So, and that's not what Mike Camilleri was. You know, Mike Camilleri was an excellent scorer, not necessarily a 200-foot player, but very clutch. Nice of you. Well, I mean, it's, you know, he'd probably argue, but he's a great guy to deal with. I loved covering Mike Camilleri for sure, but you know, not the most defensively conscious player in the world. So I think the comparison right now, I think, is to Camilleri, but I think the Canadians are trying to put Cole on a path to becoming more like a Gionta, where the scoring is there, but he's not hurting the team when they don't have the puck, kind of thing.
Anton,
yeah.
You got
No. I have nothing to add to that. I think the same. Like I think that Camilleri is basically what if you get Caulfield playing like he did last season for the rest of his career, then you have another Camilleri. But I think his potential is bigger than that. And I think also the fact that during Caulfield's sophomore year at Wisconsin, he showed that he can develop other bits of his game when he has already learned how to score at that level. And that's what's going to be interesting for this season. Obviously, it's going to be his second full season, third full season now in the NHL. And, you know, coming off a 26-goal season and a 23-goal season before that, he already knows that he can find the net. But Cole Caulfield wants to, if you look at interviews and everything, he wants to be as good of a player, as good of an NHL player as he can possibly be. And that is something that demands more from him than just, you know, finding the net behind every goalie in the league. So it will be fun. I mean, he's only 22 still. Now he's signed, so he doesn't have to care about that. He can just focus on the everyday grind of getting better and staying healthy.
Indeed.
And he has shown an ability to adapt to every level that he plays in, and really his when you say this is his third full season, really this is his first full season coming up. I'm assuming he actually plays a full season. And the number one thing I think that's really important here is that he himself is conscious of all of this. And wants it to improve. And I think he has the personality type, the work ethic, the competitiveness, everything, every part of his makeup suggests that he's going to figure this out. We just have to see it happen, but there's no doubt that he's very determined to become just a better NHL hockey player besides the goal scorer.
looking at these two, and because there are not that many left of them, I think from the playoff run.
Yeah, no, it's not that many.
How,
no.
I mean, you would assume, and we shouldn't assume because you make an ass out of you and me, but yeah. You know, we should assume that having tasted or being that close to taste success also makes you drive out of your comfort zone and maybe not being pigeonholed into that kind of player. Realistically, though, Arpon, what kind of expectations should we have for Cole Caulfield this upcoming season?
I mean, I see no reason why he can't score 40 goals. I honestly think the bar is incredibly high. He's placed it that high. I mean, it's honest. You know, aside from those first few months under Dom, every minute he's been in the NHL, basically, he's been a successful goal scorer. And so I think 40 goals is a very reasonable expectation, as silly as that sounds for a player his age. And I'm sure if you ask Cole that his bar is at 50, you know, and like his bar is 50 goals because he could have done it. You know, I mean, had he not gotten hurt, he had the possibility of scoring 50 goals last season. So I think in his mind, he probably wants to score 50. So I think 40 is a very attainable, reasonable projection. But again, not to harp on the same thing, you know, what I'll be watching from Cole Caulfield this season is he able to cut down on the number of shifts that he spends in his own end, not touching the puck? Same with Nick. I mean, so it's, that to me is the most interesting aspect of this season is what kind of development do we see in Cole's game away from the puck, but with the puck on his stick or actually in the offensive zone, just getting open and scoring goals. I think he's set a bar for that already, and 40 might even be low.
He scored against more or less every team possible in the league. Obviously he didn't already score 30 goals, but you know, yeah, he scored against top leagues. He scored against bottom teams, top teams, et cetera, et cetera. Would you take a trade-off from scoring in order for his defensive game and acumen being better?
I don't think you have to. I mean, it's. I think for centers, oftentimes you do. You do need to make that trade-off, and maybe Nick has to do that a little bit. You know, Nick has a tendency to sort of extend his shifts when he sees an offensive opportunity. I don't want to use the word cheats, but he does lean into offensive chances a bit too much sometimes. But I think Cole improving his game away from the puck would not take away in the least in his ability to score. You know, I mean, yes, he scores off the rush occasionally, but generally, or not occasionally, with relative frequency, but you know, his danger, like that'll still be a part of his game. Even if he improves his play away from the puck, I don't think that's a trade-off you have to make, especially as a winger. I mean, really, it's just a matter of bearing down when you have the opportunity to clear the puck, to actually do it, blocking shots from the point, dealing with those defensemen pinching down on you and finding techniques and methods to get the puck around them or pass them so that you can go get it in the neutral zone. But you know, those are things that aren't going to take away from his offensive game. So I don't think in his case you do need to make a trade-off. It's he should be able to improve those areas, and it won't change the situations he finds himself in that are goal-scoring situations.
You've been listening to Arpon Basu talking about Cole Caulfield, among other things, on this episode of the Top 25 Under 25, number 2. We'll be back tomorrow with number 1, and the smart ones of you have already figured out who that one is going to be. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you again, Arpon, for taking the time out of your busy day.
My pleasure, guys.